Chapter 3, Juice. Frisera drew back in disgust and remarked, "Ugh, dragon breath is vile," as the giant dragon gave them a quick sniff before turning to walk to the other side of the clearing. "Yeah, I doubt they floss too often with nothing but wings and giant claws," agreed Elisa. "You're probably right, but at least we don't seem to be on today's menu. In fact, it looks like that dragon wants us to follow him," noted Narayana as she watched Juice repeatedly turn towards them and sway his head. "Why don't you guys go see what he wants while I look at Bruno?" suggested Elisa as she started walking towards the injured dragon. "He doesn't look very healthy." "Okay, sure," agreed Narayana. She considered herself to be the leader and was slightly annoyed that Elisa had taken charge. Narayana thought they should be planning how to get away from these two vicious animals, but told herself to calm down and just go with it. Elisa was always interested in plants and animals, so it made sense that she would want to care for the beast. "Come on, Versera, let's see what the big guy wants," she grunted. Juice parted the brush on the far side of his yard to expose a small spring bubbling up from the ground and hoped that the girls would understand what was needed. He gave two of them credit for figuring out that he wanted them to follow him, but was keeping his eye on the third, who was over by safe. Narayana said, "It appears he wants us to draw some water. I'm guessing that Bruno is thirsty." Frisera replied, "No kidding, genius. Come over here and help me build a bucket." Frisera had spread a layer of leaves onto the ground and magically transformed them into a large piece of leather. She gathered the edges and melded the seams together to form a large watertight pouch. They formed it into a soft-sided bucket by molding the top into two handles. Narayana grasped one handle while Versera grabbed the other. They dipped it into the spring and carried their heavy load towards Bruno together. Elisa stroked the fallen dragon's head. The poor creature smelled awful, and Elisa swore at the seven families of Septumculus for the terrible abuse and complete lack of care he had received. She didn't know much about dragons, but it was clear that Bruno was dehydrated and starved. The heavy iron collar appeared to be choking him, and Elisa wondered how he was able to eat at all. She wasn't sure whether his neck was swollen or if he had something lodged in it just below the ring. She yelled out, "Bring some water, guys!" and jumped in surprise when Versera said, "Way ahead of you, Elisa," as she and Narayana set down the large bucket. "What do you want us to do with it?" Elisa didn't answer, but instead began scooping handfuls of water into the dragon's mouth. It was a slow process where more was spilled and transferred until Versera returned with a silver ladle she had transformed and molded from a large leaf and a stick. "Thanks, Sarah," muttered Elisa in gratitude as she accepted the spoon. She found her companions' assigned names too long, so she shortened Versera to Sarah and Narayana to Nari. Elisa wasn't sure whether they liked the nickname she coined, but they didn't seem to complain. "Ugh, dragon breath is truly awful," complained Elisa as she ladled more water into Bruno's mouth. Frisera said, "I told you so," and then noted that the dragon's breath wasn't the only thing that stank. The rest of his body reeked as well. "I can't stand this anymore," complained Frisera. "I'm going to scrub off this nasty crud." Bruno looked as though he hadn't been bathed in decades. There was mud, moss, patches that looked like bat guano, and even a few dead rodents stuck to the muck. His whole body was writhing with insects and worms feeding on the filth. Versera moved her hands over the dragon's body, and the gunk magically dissolved and slid onto the ground. This was the way the people of this world bathed, and in minutes the dragon was cleansed, the bugs and worms had scurried off, and with one final flourish of Versera's hands, the slime on the ground transformed into pretty violet flowers. The poor dragon opened one large eye and stared at the girls as if to say thank you, before closing it and passing out once more. Bruno was now clean and the terrible stench had dissipated, but the girls drew back in horror. Bruno's skin looked as though it was stretched over a frail skeleton and was covered with cuts, scabs, and open sores. This poor animal had been neglected and abused for decades. Their horror turned to disgust and anger towards the people who had done this, and they decided to take action. Elisa transformed a nearby pine cone into a stiff scrub brush and shouted, "Come on, guys, let's get these wounds cleaned." The big dragon had been watching the girls work and trying to stay out of their way. Narayana brought the bucket over to him and pointed toward the spring. The dragon understood and gently clamped the handles in his teeth. Before long, they had sufficient water to clean Bruno's wounds. Bruno occasionally groaned in pain as they pried off old scabs and treated her wounds with antiseptic spells, but she didn't complain. The girls worked on her for the rest of the afternoon. They finally sat back in exhaustion as the sun began to set. "She must feel a lot better now," noted Elisa as she dropped down next to Narayana. "What happened to the other one?"
"He flew off an hour or so ago," answered Narayana.
"Dragons. Who knows what's going on in their heads?"
"Hey, wait," interrupted Fursera. "Did you say she?"
"Yeah," laughed Elisa. "I discovered that Bruno is a girl while I was cleaning her." Somehow this seemed endlessly funny to them after their long ordeal and recent escape from death. They sat laughing and complaining about their soreness, but they were thinking about how happy they were to be free. Their reverie was shattered when a dark shadow passed over them, followed by a tremendous crash right behind their backs. Juice was pacing in his yard, trying to stay out of the girl's way. Or at least he was trying to pace. The area was far too small for a dragon his size to do much more than shuffle from foot to foot, doing a sort of nervous dance while trying to keep his tail from hitting anyone. The stress of seeing his love lying there in pain while he was helpless was driving him crazy. He was about to let loose a roar of frustration when he heard Safe's voice in his head.
"Don't worry, Betel. I'll be fine," she assured him. "These girls are doing a great job, and I'm already feeling better. I'm just going to rest here for a while."
Juice didn't believe her for a second. One look at this frail creature lying in a heap and struggling to breathe would make anyone realize that she was dying. Juice had been staring at her all afternoon, but couldn't respond because he was too busy trying to choke back tears.
"Betel, would you be a dear and do me a favor?" asked Safe.
"Anything, anything at all for you, my love," choked Juice.
"I promised to meet Stavius and Janice, the two boys who helped me escape, at Gamari's nest tomorrow night. I don't even know if they made it out of that mess earlier today, but I certainly won't be able to fly over there. Would you mind picking them up and bringing them here? I want to thank Stavius, if he is still alive."
"I'll get him right now," shouted Juice as he leaped into the air and flew away.
"Betel, tomorrow! They aren't going to be there until tomorrow night,"
shouted Safe with her mind, but the big dragon was already gone. Safe sighed and smiled at how Juice hadn't changed in the past 100 years. Then she closed her eyes and passed out. Juice raced to Gamari's nest, trying to recall its exact location. He remembered that it was across the river, in the northeastern hills at the far edge of the magic well, but he had to circle for a while until he found it. Gamari's family had abandoned their nest some time back, and someone had planted long pointed sticks into the ground to keep them from returning. These were effective deterrents to the Gamari family, who were fierce but smaller Hogan dragons. Juice, however, yanked them out of the ground with his massive talons and tossed them into the woods. The mighty dragon sat by the mouth of the abandoned cave and peered inside. He spent nearly an hour calling for Stavius to no avail. He was becoming more and more annoyed with that boy. Stavius, unlike the girl Safe brought to his cave, was able to converse with him, and was the boy who had appeared at Juice's cave yesterday with some unicorn horns he needed to recharge. They had spent several hours pleasantly conversing while the horns were charging in Juice's nest. Stavius had seemed like such a sweet boy, and Juice was annoyed that the inconsiderate jerk wasn't responding. Juice was once again in a helpless situation. Safe, the love of his life, had asked him to bring back the boys, and he couldn't even do that one simple task. What was he going to do? Return empty-handed and suggest that he try again tomorrow? Somehow, something clicked with that thought. Didn't Safe say something about the boys being here tomorrow night?
"Argh!" Juice bellowed, accompanied by a billowing cloud of black smoke. "I am such an idiot!"
He jumped into the air and roared again. His frustration and anger were too much to control. He needed to destroy something. The angry dragon swooped down to the farms in the fertile valley below. He stomped, smashed, tore, and threw plants, bushes, trees, and fences throughout the valley for several minutes before stopping to catch his breath. Juice looked back at the swath of destruction he had wrecked in his rampage across the valley. He might be a fierce and powerful dragon, but he was also a gardener. He had no reason to destroy these plants, and he had no quarrel with the frightened farmers fleeing toward the western hills. Juice sighed and realized that he was being childish and petty. He hoped that Safe never found out about this, because
He never wanted her to see him as being anything but strong and caring. He poked a few bushes and trees here and there, trying to fix some of the damage, but it only made it worse. He was thoroughly embarrassed by his actions and wanted to find some way to redeem himself and this wasted trip. Suddenly, he had an idea. The girls must be starving. He knew that humans didn't eat meat and that they might eat some of the crops he had just trampled. He'd bring dinner home to his guests. Juice was incredibly pleased with this idea until he realized that dragon talons were useless for harvesting and carrying green beans, zucchinis, or lettuce. He sat down on a pile of apples which the farmers had been harvesting before his tirade. He spent a few minutes picking at the tiny fruits with his massive claws, wondering what to do. "I'm useless," he lamented to himself. "I can't even pick an apple." Then he glanced at a tree laden with apples and smiled a broad grin. "But I can pick an apple tree." A few minutes later, he had dug up the tree and was flying back to his cave, carrying it and its bounty of apples in his talons. The girls had finished tending to Safe and were sitting next to her when he arrived. They seemed startled when he gently set the tree down in the center of his yard. Well, the tree kind of slipped out of his claws about 25 feet above the ground, but still, he was offended at how they jumped up and began screaming at him. Didn't they realize he had just brought them a meal? They should be grateful, not angry. Juice was insulted that they were so upset. He sat at the entrance to his cave and sulked. Juice didn't like all this disruption to his orderly life, and he certainly didn't understand these strange humans. He couldn't comprehend why they couldn't understand him, although he did occasionally catch snippets of their conversations. Their minds were so muddled that it was hard to make much sense of their thoughts. One of them had finally walked over to the tree and grabbed an apple, but she tossed it away after giving it a quick sniff. Didn't she understand that this was food? The girl had to be hungry, but she was picking up apples and flinging them into the woods instead of eating them. Now she was attacking his poor broken rhododendron with a long stick. Juice had had enough and strode over to grab the girl's stick and confront her for damaging his property. Suddenly, he felt her emotions wash over him. He felt concerned for Safe. He felt her anger towards the people who had tortured his dragon friend. But mostly, he felt her sharp frustration at being unable to remove the iron collar and her profound sadness that Safe was dying. Juice was finally beginning to read this girl's emotions and a few of her thoughts. He wondered if she could understand any of his. "Her name is Safe," he thought with intense concentration. Narayana, Versara, and Elisa all jumped when the apple tree crashed to the ground a few yards away. "What is wrong with you, you stupid dragon? You almost killed us," shouted Versara as she picked up an apple and threw it at him. "I think it's just his way of bringing us some food, Sarah," said Elisa. "I know," retorted Versara, "but do you have to be so calm and rational? Give me a break. I was almost squashed by a falling tree." "It's a nice gesture," agreed Narayana. She walked over to the tree and picked up an apple. "But I can't eat, even though I should be famished. Somehow spending all afternoon cleaning poor old Bruno's wounds and failing to pry that choke collar off has spoiled my appetite." They had spent hours cleaning Bruno, and then more hours trying to get the collar off. They tried breaking it. They tried lubricating it. They tried using magic to enlarge it. They even tried magically transforming it into materials which would stretch or crack. Nothing worked. It had some sort of magical enhancement placed on it which could not be broken. They couldn't get it off, and Bruno's neck continued to swell. Narayana was angry and threw a few apples into the woods to let off some steam. "I guess we should give Bruno another name now that we know that he's a she," said Elisa. "How about Brunhilde?" offered Versara. "How about the fact that naming her doesn't much matter because she'll probably be dead tomorrow anyway?" yelled Narayana as she picked up a large stick. That frail dragon, which she had thought was so large and fierce a few hours ago, had saved their lives and was now dying because of her effort. The grievous wounds and cruel choke collar were the causes of her impending demise, but the exertion from her carrying them away from the melee probably hastened the process. Narayana repeatedly swung the stick at the bush which had broken the fall of her friends as she vented her frustration. "Evil people, worthless talismans, stupid prophecy, stupid collar," she muttered as she beat the bushes with a stick. She dropped her stick as she turned to hide her tears from her friends and softly cried,
Stupid Bruno, why do you have to die?
Her name is Safe, came a deep baritone voice in her head. Narayana turned around and saw the giant dragon staring at her.
Did you say that? She mouthed at the dragon. He nodded and she walked over to him. What's your name? She asked.
The dragon closed his eyes and seemed to concentrate, but while Narayana could hear his voice in her head, she had difficulty making sense out of his thoughts.
What are you doing, Nari? Asked Elisa.
I think he's trying to talk to me, answered Narayana.
I think he said that Bruno's real name is Safe, and while it doesn't make any sense, I think his name is something like Juice.
Juice leaped up and vigorously nodded his head up and down. Then he bent down and snaked his long neck close to the ground near Narayana.
I think he likes you, laughed Rosera. Perhaps he wants to be petted.
No, I think he wants me to climb on his back, answered Narayana. She was unsure, but climbed up on the dragon's neck.
He lifted his head, and she panicked as she slid down towards his back. Her legs were straddled around his neck near his shoulders at the base of his mighty wings. Juice snaked his head around and winked, as if to say, hang on, before jumping into the sky.
Narayana grasped handfuls of feathers as she clung to the soaring dragon. She was terrified that she would fall off, but Juice was flying carefully, albeit fast, and awe soon overpowered her fear. They had spiraled up 1,000 or more feet in the air, and she could see the entire great city of Septumculus and the surrounding area. She saw pristine forests and villages and fields. She also saw the destroyed fairgrounds and Admian Castle within the large, dingy, blighted area where magic had temporarily collapsed. And she saw the 6 remaining castles in the distance. Those castles housed the powerful families who ruled Septumculus and who had imprisoned the girls in Safe. Narayana felt a surge of anger towards those families and suspected that it was originating with both Juice and herself. Juice tucked his wings tightly against his body and dove towards Ringheld Castle. Narayana would have screamed, but couldn't open her mouth against the wind from Juice's power dive. He blasted a torrent of flame at the building just before pulling up, and it harmlessly illuminated some sort of magical shield surrounding the castle. He repeated his attacks 2 more times and even clawed against it with his mighty talons, but could inflict no damage. He eventually tired of his futile flailing and flew over to the fairgrounds, landing in the ruins of the aviary. His attacks might have been ineffective, but the effort raised both Juice's and Narayana's spirits. It was like smacking the rhododendron bush with a stick, but infinitely more satisfying. Their moods soured, however, as they stared at the former prison. Narayana slid off Juice's neck and walked over to the remains of the cage in which she had lived in public display for the past 3 months. Its bars were now little more than warped and broken shards of metal. Juice walked over to the barren cave where Safe had been confined for the past century and let out a long, plaintive wail. The wail transformed into an angry roar, and he blasted the cave with a searing stream of fire. He turned to look at Narayana kneeling beside her prison and gave a short snort. She stood and walked over to him to climb back on his back, but he rose up and spewed another stream of fire at her cage instead. The two of them watched her former jail cell melt into a bubbling, muddy puddle and shared a small feeling of pointless victory.
Thanks. I needed that, she whispered to him as she leaned against his scaly, feathered hide.
Narayana climbed back onto Juice's shoulders and they rose into the sky again. He charged at the long bridge crossing the Septumgulus River, but it was also protected by a magic shield. However, the ends of the bridge were not protected, and Juice managed to destroy the guard facilities at the southern entrance while sending the guards fleeing into the nearby cotton fields.
Narayana suggested, "Hey, we might not be able to break it, but it might be fun to clog it up."
She swore she felt the big dragon chuckle as he landed by the southern entrance and she jumped off. Juice took a deep breath and blew dragon fire into the bridge entrance. The magic shield formed a sort of tube around the bridge and kept the flames inside just as well as it kept Juice's previous attempt out. The result was a brilliant orange tube of fire arching across the river in the day's fading light. Screams ran out from across the river as a massive ball of fire erupted from the far end. While the bridge wasn't destroyed, it was severely damaged and spewed black smoke as it smoldered. Juice turned around and began scratching at the dirt with his powerful legs. Great plumes of dirt were dug up and kicked into the bridge tube until a thick earthen plug had formed.
The great dragon then rammed his head against it several times to compact the dirt and blasted it with his flaming breath. The bridge was blocked with an earthen plug as hard as concrete by the time he was done, and the two new friends flew home feeling tired, but better than they had all afternoon.